Starting with Chapter 7, Integumentary System and Body Temperature. We start with the functions of the integumentary system. And it says there is the integumentary system is a complex organ that performs many different functions. One of the functions is that it performs an excretory function. Although excretion is a minor role, the skin is able to excrete water, salt, and small amounts of waste, such as urea. It also acts as a gland by synthesizing vitamin D when exposed to sunlight. Vitamin D is necessary for the absorption of calcium from the digestive tract. When we're looking at the structure of the skin, figure 7.1 on page 95 has a good picture here. First, we're going to talk about the different layers of the skin, and the epidermis is the thin outer layer of the skin. Like all epithelial tissue, the epidermis is avascular. Oxygen and nutrients, however, diffuse into the lower epidermis from the rich supply of blood that is in the underlying dermis. And then we have the stratum germinativum. This lies on top of the dermis and has access to a rich supply of blood. It's continuously dividing, producing millions of cells per day, and they push those older cells up towards the surface of the epithelium. There's a box right here in the Do You Know that says if Toad did it. This is talking about, does Toad have anything to do with the wart that's on Helga's nose? The wart is an epidermal growth on the skin that's caused by a virus. And the toad is innocent of this charge of giving the wart to the witch here, but it says toad skin can harbor and therefore transmit salmonella. Stratum corneum is on the surface layer of the epidermis, and it's composed of about 30 layers of dead, flattened, keratinized cells. The dead cells continuously slough off and exfoliated or desquamated through wear and tear. These dead sloughed off cells are called dander. And when dander is clumped up by the oil that's on our skull, it's called dandruff. So when someone gets a tattoo, where do you think that they are, what layer of the skin do you think they're getting their tattoo in? Well, it says the ink that's used in creating a tattoo must be deposited into the dermis because of the sloughing characteristic of the epidermis. We don't want the tattoo to just slough off. And the dermis is located beneath the epidermis, and it is the largest portion of the skin. It also talks about fingerprints and says that the wavy boundary that's between the epidermis and the dermis is like ridges of a cardboard, so that the interlocking ridges are helping the skin to not slip. And those ridges form the fingerprints that we have on our fingers. Skin can tell a story, as it will reflect disease processes in the body. For example, herpes zoster, which is shingles. And then drug reactions are also revealed by skin changes. And examples would be someone that's allergic to penicillin and breaks out in hives, or urticaria. And then if there is constant irritation or rubbing of an area, that will cause the rate of the epidermal cell division to increase. And this will make a thickened area that's called a callus. The dermis lies on the subcutaneous layer. It lies under the skin and is therefore called the subcutaneous layer, or hypodermis, meaning below the dermis. The subcutaneous tissue performs two main roles. It insulates the body from extreme temperature changes in the external environment, and it also anchors the skin to the underlying structures. When you are injecting medication into the subcutaneous layer, that needle will go through the epidermis and then the dermis, and then the tip of the needle will go into the subcutaneous layer. You need to make sure the needle is not too long. Subcutaneous injections, the needle's shorter, and also you go at an angle to stay in the subcutaneous tissue and not get into the muscle. When we're looking at skin color, melanocytes secrete a skin darkening pigment that's called melanin. That melanin will stain those cells that are surrounding it and causes them to darken. So the more melanin that's secreted, the darker the skin color. And when that melanin is Concentrated in local areas, freckles and moles will develop. Carotene is the yellowish tint and usually is hidden in most people by the effects of melanin. But because people of Asian descent have little melanin in their skin, the carotene gives their skin that yellow tint. And then with blood, if the blood is poorly oxygenated, it can cause the skin to look blue. This condition is called cyanosis. And a person that has liver disease cannot excrete the pigment called bilirubin, and then there it's deposited into the skin, which will turn their skin yellow, which is also called jaundice. And another way to also impart, to have the skin have a yellow tint based off of diet, if you are overeating carotene-rich vegetables like carrots, that could happen. When we're looking at accessory structures of the skin, we're going to look at hair. The main function of our sparse body hair is to sense insects on the skin before they can sting us. Eyelashes and eyebrows help to protect our eyes from dust and perspiration. And this hair growth is influenced by the hormones estrogen and testosterone. And when a woman has too much testosterone, excessive hair growth occurs, including hair on their face. And excessive hair growth is called hirsutism. It's from a Greek word meaning shaggy. Hair color is determined by the type and amount of melanin secretion. So with age, the melanocytes become less active, and then they have an absence of melanin, which is going to produce white hair. When trying to determine if the hair is going to be curly, wavy, or straight, that is determined through the shape of the hair shaft. A round shaft produces straight hair, where an oval shaft produces wavy hair. Curly and kinky strands of hair are the result of flat hair shafts. There is a group of smooth muscle cells that are called erector pili that are attached to the hair follicle. Contraction of these muscles causes the hair to stand on end, like when that cat in the picture on page 99 is scared and the hair is all standing up. Nails are described as thin plates of stratified squamous epithelial cells that contain a very hard form of keratin. The pink color of nails is caused by the blood vessels underneath the dermal layer beneath the nail. When someone has clubbing of the nails, it indicates chronic lung and heart disease. This is a condition that indicates that the fingertips have received an insufficient supply of oxygenated blood over a period of time. If somebody has poor oxygenation or a thyroid gland dysfunction or a nutritional anemia, that can lead to brittle nails. When we're talking about the glands, two major exocrine glands are associated with the skin. It's the sebaceous glands and the sweat glands. Most sebaceous glands secrete an oily substance called sebum. And these glands play a unique role in the fetus. Babies are born with a covering that resembles cream cheese, and the covering is called vernix caseosa. It's secreted by the sebaceous glands. Sudoriferous glands are located in the dermis, and they secrete sweat. Apocrine glands are associated with hair follicles that are found in the axillary and genital areas. Eccrine glands are numerous and widely distributed, and they're located throughout the body, especially on the forehead, neck, back, upper lip, palms, and soles, and they're not associated with hair follicles. These eccrine glands also play an important role in regulating the body temperature, and they're the glands that sweat profusely on hot days and during periods of strenuous exercise. Modified sweat glands are going to include mammary glands and ceruminous glands. Mammary glands are located in the breast and they secrete milk. Ceruminous glands are found in the external auditory canal of the ear and they secrete cerumen or earwax. Now, when we're talking about body temperature, the normal body temperature is about 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, although it still can range from anywhere from 97 to 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Rectal temperatures measure the core temperature, and they range between 99 to 99.7 degrees Fahrenheit, whereas the oral temperature is going to be about 1 degree Fahrenheit lower than the rectal temperature. Body temperature is maintained by the body balancing the heat production and heat loss, and this is called thermoregulation. When the body is failing to thermoregulate, it can cause a decrease in the body temperature. An excessive decrease is going to be called hypothermia, whereas an excessive increase is called hyperthermia. The amount of heat produced can be affected by things such as food consumption, amounts and types of hormones secreted, and physical activity. And with exercise, the heat produced by the muscles can increase enormously. 80% of heat loss occurs through the skin, whereas the remaining 20% is lost through the respiratory system and in the excretory products, so urine and feces. Radiation means that the heat is lost from a warm object, like the body, to the cooler air surrounding the warm object. Conduction is the loss of heat from a warm body to a cooler object in contact with the warm body. Convection is the loss of heat by air currents that are moving over the surface of the skin. And evaporation occurs when a liquid becomes a gas. And on a hot, humid day, water cannot evaporate from the surface of the skin, and that's the reason why heat loss is diminished. With exercise and temperature elevation, the blood vessels dilate. Thereby, this allows more blood to flow to the skin, and this will transfer the heat from the deeper tissues to the surface of the body. Temperature elevation also stimulates the activity of the sweat glands. As the sweat evaporates from the surface of the body, heat is lost. So if we're able to sweat and it evaporates from the body, the heat is lost. Whereas on a humid day, the water was not able to evaporate from the surface of the skin, so heat loss was diminished. Now, when someone is cold, the blood vessels will constrict, and that reduces blood flow to the skin. This response will trap the blood and heat in the deeper tissues, preventing heat loss. Make sure and look at figure 7.5, where it describes temperature regulation. You see the girl that's running on a hot sunny day and sweating. And it says increased temperature. When you have increased temperature, your blood vessels are going to dilate. That's going to give you a flushed appearance. And then you're going to be sweating more because your sweat glands are more active. And then when the temperature is decreased on a cold day, those blood vessels are going to constrict. That heat will be trapped in deeper tissues. The sweat glands are going to become less active, so you're not sweating. And the skeletal muscles are going to start to contract, which causes you to shiver. Now, fat acts as an insulator, and it helps to prevent heat loss. The neonate generally only has a thin layer of subcutaneous fat. Shivering produces heat. The neonate cannot shiver, but does produce heat by a process that's called non-shivering thermogenesis. The neonate has brown adipose tissue, or also called BAT, and metabolism of BAT generates more heat than the metabolism of ordinary adipose tissue. On page 104, there is a thermometer here of these temperatures that were recorded orally. Now, if the temperatures are recorded through different techniques like rectal or axillary, they're going to be higher or lower. Like we said, rectal is going to be 1 degree higher and axillary would be 1 degree lower than the oral. Normothermia refers to a normal temperature, where fever is also called pyrexia. Pyrogenic cytokines, often secreted by pathogens, increase the hypothalamic set point or thermostat. And this fever or pyrexia can be lowered by either getting rid of the infection or giving an fever lowering drug like aspirin or an antipyretic, Tylenol, ibuprofen. This fever or pyrexia is on the right side of this thermometer on this picture. So if we looked on the left side of the thermometer, it's going to show hyperthermia and hypothermia. Hyperthermia, like we said, is an elevation of the body temperature. That is the body's inability to get rid of excessive heat, and the body can simply cannot cool off itself. Antipyretics like Tylenol and aspirin, ibuprofen are not going to be effective because the set point is normal. And the advanced state of hyperthermia is called heat stroke or sunstroke. And if this goes on without treatment, it can lead to death. And hypothermia, again, refers to the decrease in the body temperature, usually caused by a prolonged exposure to cold, like falling through the ice into cold water. And if this is not taken care of and the temperature drops below 95 degrees, it could lead to death. When we're talking about burns, large areas of skin can be lost because of burns, and they are classified according to the depth of the burn and the extent of the surface burned area. There is a picture on 105, figure 7.6, that shows how they see how much of the surface area of the skin is burned, and they call it the rule of nines. When we're talking about a first degree burn, this burn is red, painful, and slightly swollen. Second degree burn involves damage to both the epidermis and the dermis. Third degree burns are more severe, and the epidermis and dermis are destroyed, and also could be destruction of the deeper underlying layers. And because of the destruction of the underlying layers, third degree burns are painless because the sensory receptors have been destroyed. And these third degree burns may look like white, tan, brown, black, or a deep cherry red. Severe burns also can be associated with eschar. Eschar is dead, burned tissue that forms a thick, inflexible, scab-like layer over the burned surface. And don't forget the medical and terminology disorders that are on page 107. Before that, you also have your As You Age green box to look over for older adults. But just recap to remember that thermogenesis refers to the production of heat by physiological processes like shivering. And if someone has a congenital nevus, it's considered a birthmark. And this concludes chapter 7.